voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning on WICC 600.
All right, well, we are definitely following what's going on with the storm, but we also are following some top news stories. And one of the biggest ones this week, we have two confirmed cases, the first two this year, of West Nile virus, both in our listening area. And of course, Dr. Brown, I know we talk a lot of COVID on this show with you, but we certainly have other things we got to keep an eye on. Isn't that right?
That's exactly right. Yes, and I saw that the two West Nile cases.
I'm curious, you know, with West Nile, do we typically do see, though, unfortunately, cases every summer, right, Dr. Brown? I mean, this is pretty common.
Yes, we do. It's actually a very common virus. It occurs on some regular frequency every summer. There's a very small percentage of people who are infected with West Nile virus that can get very sick, as we saw with these two patients.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a pretty common virus, and it's again mainly brought by mosquitoes.
And I'm curious, you know, with both of these patients, it sounds like, Dr. Brown, they're in their 70s. So, unfortunately, they could have some other underlying health conditions. But, you know, typically, what are some of the things that you go through if you contract West Nile?
So, West Nile in general, so again, there's a big percentage of people who actually end up getting it, and the majority of people have limited to no symptoms at all.
Really?
Absolutely. If you went and sort of took everybody's blood and look for antibodies for West Nile, you'd find that the majority of us have probably had it already.
Wait, hold on. So stop the presses.
It's very common.
Wait, so there's probably a lot of people who are just undetected who have West Nile? Like when they get a mosquito bite, they just don't realize they probably have West Nile?
Yeah, that's exactly right, yes.
Wow.
That there are people who have actually, in fact, in this area, the longer you've been in this area and the more mosquitoes that bite you've had, the likelihood is that you've actually had exposure or have actually had West Nile virus.
Do you know if you have it?
A lot of times you don't. The majority of the people who actually get West Nile or get a bite from a mosquito that has West Nile virus has minimal to no symptoms at all.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And then there is about, you know, it drops down. Probably about 98% do absolutely fine, and then about 2% have some serious complications, and that's why we have to monitor it very closely.
Wait, that's crazy, though, Dr. Brown. So why does that happen? Why do most people not even react to West Nile? I remember growing up in the 90s, and you heard about West Nile, like, taking over, and it was the scariest thing, and, oh, don't let your kids out unless they got bug repellent and long sleeves and all that. And we still say that, but I mean...
You still have to be careful about it.
Yeah.
But as I said, as research goes, and as more and more epidemiologic studies have been demonstrated, that it's actually, as I said, pretty common. And as it is, the majority of people do not have any symptoms at all. Now, again, that doesn't mean you can't be careful, because
right,
you actually have to be careful. You can get reinfected by the virus, and you can have a bad outcome. Usually it's older people or people who have immune issues, and sometimes it's just random. People don't really know. But that's why you only hear about, a couple, maybe half a dozen every year.
Wow.
This is sort of, because it's common, it's the small percentage that ends up becoming really sick with it.
So I'm curious, what makes people really sick versus those who just virtually have nothing at all? Like, is it that you're older? Is it underlying health conditions? Like, what made these two people really sick and then probably the dozens of others not even end up in a doctor's office for their mosquito bites?
Right. The answer is nobody's exactly sure. Obviously, as you get older, your immune system is a little bit less, able to react to these things. Comorbidities, other illnesses make it a lot more difficult to fight off this type of infection. But again, it's, nobody really knows. It has something to do with our immune systems and how we just fight off the virus. Or it could be the virus itself. It just does not take effect like other viruses would.
Wow. We're talking to Dr. Brown this morning. He's our infectious disease expert. He's on every week here on WICC, and we typically talk about COVID. And I think, if anybody has COVID questions, you can always pass them along to me, and Dr. Brown will, of course, talk about it. But a couple of other big health stories have really taken the headlines lately. One, West Nile virus. The other, though, I've noticed right next door to us, Dr. Brown, Legionnaire's disease. I believe it was something like 7 New Yorkers in the last 3 weeks have gotten this. First of all, what is it?
I'm sorry, I lost you on that one.
Oh, no, you're fine. Legionnaires, am I saying it correctly?
Yes.
Legionnaires disease, is that it?
Yes, yes.
What is it?
So Legionnaires disease is actually a bacterial infection, and it's associated. The reason why it's called Legionnaires disease is because it was actually found in a Legionnaires meeting in the 1950s.
Oh, wow.
Where a group of older men were having a meeting. It's interesting because older men, smokers, they were having a meeting, and a group of them ended up getting sick. And it's actually a pneumonia that people will get, and it's actually carried by this organism called Legionella. And this organism, it calls a bacterial pneumonia, and it's usually in people who are, again, a little bit older, smokers, has a propensity to hit men, but it is a certain type of pneumonia. They found out that the reason why these men got it is it actually has a tendency to be in contaminated water. And in particular, this was associated with water that was associated with a air conditioner, and it was bringing up this water that actually had the bacteria in it. These gentlemen who were susceptible ended up breathing it in and developing this pneumonia.
Oh, wow. So, mm-hmm. I mean, in these cases, do you know why? I mean, I haven't really heard of this before. I mean, would you consider it kind of rare, or is it something we also commonly hear about? We just don't see it in the headlines that much.
It's actually I would not consider it rare. I mean, it is uncommon, but I could tell you that probably every physician has, at least inpatient physician, has seen it. It is actually the bacteria is relatively common. We take a lot of precautions, in particular in hospitals and other, you know, water type safety areas, to make sure that it's areas are properly cleaned, air conditioners are properly cleaned, they're at the right temperatures. This is why it's really important to do it, because we don't want to aerosolize this bacteria. If a patient comes in to the hospital, part of our treatment, before we know exactly what it is always to make sure that we're treating for Legionella. So we always,
wow.
Whenever someone comes in with a pneumonia, we actually make sure they're on antibiotics that will cover this, because if we don't, people can get really sick from it, and you can potentially die if we don't treat it.
So from this, like the water that you're talking about, like where you could get it contaminated in water, is that a big reason why people are not big on like dehumidifiers for like babies? You know what I'm talking about? How they're like weirded mm-hmm. out by those for kids? Is that like a reason why, or no? Am I just making stuff up?
It would probably be the other way around. Instead of a dehumidifier, a humidifier.
A humidifier, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. You'd have to be more, you do need to be a little bit careful about that. But again, most of our water is treated, screened for this type of bacteria. And again, you have to get quite a bit to even get an infection from it. And interesting enough, it doesn't really affect infants and children as much as it does, older than 50. And again, people who have some sort of chronic illness, in particular lung disease, is where smokers are really susceptible to it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so we talked West Nile virus after the two confirmed cases here in Connecticut. Also, Legionnaires' disease. We had a number of cases in New York City just in the last month. So, Dr. Brown, I did want to switch gears and talk a little bit about COVID. Earlier this week, we had a report out of New Zealand that a woman died after receiving the Pfizer vaccine. Now, of course, I had a lot of inquiries about this, as you can imagine. And the Independent Vaccine Safety Monitoring Board there says that the woman's death was probably due to myocarditis. First of all, am I saying that correctly? Myocarditis? Okay.
Yeah, you are, yes.
Okay, what is that?
So myocarditis is inflammation of the heart. It's nonspecific, and it's just the heart being inflamed.
Okay. So my question initially is, could that be connected? Could the vaccine have caused that?
It's really tough to say. I mean, there's so many other factors associated with a human in general. I mean, there's just so many pieces that are there that it's kind of tough to say. Specifically, if there was enough of a inflammatory reaction, you know, was there enough irritation to the heart to lead to a problem? It's very unusual for someone to die of myocarditis. There's usually other complications associated with it. Mm-hmm. So again, it doesn't fit directly. So if someone said to me, the patient had myocarditis, those are usually self-limiting. you know, they get some medication to keep the inflammation down, and then they do fine.
Well, and it was interesting too, Dr. Brown, because after this initial report, it seemed like Europe kind of stepped up and was like, hold on, wait a minute, let's hold the phone on this. Because like the UK, for example, the European Medicines Agency, they said they've seen 195 reports of myocarditis among people who have received the Pfizer vaccine. But that's still about 5 cases per million people. And most of them had only mild symptoms after getting the myocarditis. And so I'm curious, you know, even if Pfizer vaccine were to cause something like this, it's treatable, right? I mean, this isn't something that,
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And the cases that we've actually seen, as I said, are usually not even enough to if they're going to spend spend some time in the hospital, it's not even enough to spend it. It's usually a night, if that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have just, you know, it just resolves on its own with, again, anti-inflammatories and life goes on. Mm-hmm. So there's probably some underlying. Again, the whole point of a vaccine is to activate the immune system. So if you activate the immune system, then inflammation can potentially occur. That's why we get the symptoms we do when we get the vaccine. So having a very small amount of people who could have, you know, some sort of reaction is not that surprising. But again, I think it needs to be put into proportion, like you've just demonstrated.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dr. Brown, and I'm sure this is more of a personal opinion, it feels like the entire world is looking for reasons for this vaccine to fail. I feel like working in news, these stories will come up and then we'll get inundated with questions about, you know, well, why are you behind this and so on and so forth. And I guess my question to you, you know, almost like an overarching, I don't need specific details, but I mean, are other vaccines out there that could cause things like myocarditis or like the blood clots that we saw with the Johnson & Johnson? You know, we're so hyper-focused on COVID that I'm just curious, like, could there be other vaccines out there that we've all been using since we were babies that could be triggering things like this, but we're just not hyper-focused on it?
Absolutely. That's exactly right. And again, when we do get these vaccines, we're getting them sporadically. It's not millions of people are getting a single vaccine at a single time. Mm-hmm. And that's actually the same for any medication. So, I mean, there's you know, anything in a large enough quantity is toxic. So that's sort of, there's going to be some sort of association. Mm-hmm. You're going to see it when there's so many people that are there because we are so different. And because we're so different, we're going to have at least a little bit of a difference. But I don't want people to be afraid because they hear about these reactions because, again, these are extremely uncommon. Mm-hmm. I mean, very, very rare. And since they're so rare, and again, a lot of these are self-limited, it does not mean that you should not get the vaccine. In fact, if you look at the numbers and you compare sort of any reaction to the vaccine versus the complications and death associated with COVID-19, it's minuscule.
Well, Dr. Brown, we always appreciate you talking about everything from COVID to West Nile and everything in between. Thank you so much for all your time.
You're welcome, Melissa.
All right. We'll talk again next week.